Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to the Bituation Room on a Thursday, May 14th. And joining me, co-host of the Majority Report, fresh off her M Majority Thursdays, is the one and only Emma Vigeland.
What's up, Francesca Fiorentini, my dear friend? How are you today?
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing okay. You know, trying to stay above my skis work-wise and all the things I got to do. And bracing for the hottest summer ever here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So, Emma, I'm going to have to get you back to LA when we're in, like, just deep fire season, which
okay
is kind of year-round. But
yeah, I mean, look, soon I'll be looking for any excuse to get out there. I'm not sure if the heat in the summer is the biggest draw.
No.
But, honestly, it's more the friends that I get to see when I get when I go out there. And so I use work as an excuse, but the reality is that you're both a work person and a friend, and I also have other friends. So, I mean, honestly, you don't have to tell me twice. We'll figure out another time.
Yes, we will. And no, you don't have other friends. I'm your only friend. And
yes,
that's how I've decided my parasocial / real social relationship with you will go.
Agree.
There's so
all our eggs in this basket, girl.
It's just you and me. There is only one couple in so-called leftist media that has put all their eggs in each other's basket and sort of driving off the cliff, the political cliff, together, Thelma Louise style.
I respect them. I mean, we were doing some dark woke stuff today on the Majority Report, making fun of Nick Shirley. Now, ooh, some people were a little bit antsy that it could come off as ableist. And I said, look, we are in the Kyle Kulinski dark woke era. We have to be able to go at these people, especially if you're Nick Shirley and you talk like you have peanut butter on the roof of your mouth.
I have to find he does have peanut butter on the roof of his mouth. I will say the craziest thing about Nick Shirley is that he speaks Spanish fluently. He was doing, it's wild. He was doing his, like, you know, the thing that, you know, right-wing influencers do when they get to LA, which is they go to Skid Row and, like, gotcha by being like, look at the unhoused. I mean, they don't say right, unhoused, but, like, they're, and he speaks, like, really fluent English. But there, someone has to fucking find this video for me. I'm going to text Matt right now. He showed me the video, a video of a Turning Point USA meeting and some guys who were trying to tell people on their socials to come to the Turning Point USA meeting. I have to show it to you.
Okay.
Because speaking of punching down, there is a degree of making fun of MAGA that I'm like, when is this actually being ableist? Like, when is it not okay to make fun of people? Like, it's funny to see, like, you know, Kid Rock up there, and like, that doesn't feel like punching down. But then you see, like, the weirdos in the mosh pit at, like, you know, the Kid Rock, you know, America Fest or whatever, the alternative Super Bowl halftime show, and you're like, bruh, they're not working with the full set, you know?
I mean, as somebody who used to go to a lot of Trump rallies, a lot of them are drunk. Like, I mean, what I think is interesting about MAGA 2.0, Trump 2.0,
mm-hmm,
is that they've really embraced their love of drinking in, like, a frat boy kind of way. A lot of the Trump rallies that I would go to, people were tailgating like they were about to go see a NASCAR event or go to a football game or something. And oftentimes the most insane quotes I would get from Trump supporters would be them kind of off their faces.
And you could smell.
You can smell. Oh yeah, definitely. A variety of different people, different smells, different alcohols.
many smells at the Trump rally. Here's my thing that, you know, their God, you know, their dumbass fascist has won now twice, getting away with absolute murder, corruption, is a pedophile, all the things allegedly. And like, if that was our guy, if that was Bernie, like, who, you know, democratic socialist in implementing single payer, implementing a Green New Deal, pulling our U.S. money out of military bases across the world and reinvesting it in, like, you know, high speed rail in this country, I would tailgate the fuck out of that. Like there is part of me that's like, I would be drunk the whole time.
Yes, yes. I would be celebrating. We would, you know, be riding into the stadium on unicorns and that kind of thing. I think it would be more
on our free
of a,
ponies, because yeah. Socialists want their free ponies.
Free ponies, but of course, you know, the elites like us who carried Bernie as propagandists to victory would get the unicorns. And I think it would be more of like a weed smoking situation.
Totally.
The right can have drinking. Like, I always feel when
it's
I
a
do
Coachella
come out,
stagecoach. Coach, you know, yeah. Kind of comparison.
When I come out to LA, I do feel sometimes like a fish out of water or a fish in water, and everybody's out of the liquid courage business. Like, a lot of people in LA just don't drink anymore. And in New York, I think it's just a function of nobody being, you know, driving anywhere. You know, you just take public transit or an Uber. And so there's just more of a drinking culture here, but it's not good for you. You know, like weed's where it's at. Weed's tight. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Weed's tight. You heard it here first in the Bituation Room. I love the idea. Don't say weed's tight.
Weed's tight.
Here's the thing about me and weed. You at 16 were like in a fucking all-girls school learning about how to be the next leader of America. I at 16 was stoned out of my mind putting on, you know, renditions of Midsummer Night's Dream because I was in drama class. Like,
I was also stoned out of my mind. I just was not doing as well at the all-girls school thing as other people. Like, I'm about to go on a bachelorette trip for my best friend who's a doctor, and we went to high school together, and she was like, I mean, killing it. I was more like, I didn't try in high school in the sense that, like, I could do English and history. I'd already read a lot of the books. I was a bit of a nerd like that, and I could just not do my homework and still get A's.
God damn, I hate your kind. I hate your kind.
But not with science and math. Like, part of why I was not considered that good of a student was because I'd try the same stuff for science and math, and it did not go well for
me. You're like, nope.
No.
Well, speaking of people who are definitely not excelling in the top of their class, this is a video. TPUSA at ACU. Wait, where is ACU? Hang on.
ACU. That's Arizona Central?
Arizona Central. Okay, let's hopefully.
That's what I'm assuming.
Okay, Franny's going to attempt to do this.
Wow, dude, that was amazing. Wow. You can see, you want to see more of that, come to our meeting tonight at 6. We're going to do some frisbee golf. It'll be fun, and I hope you come.
Tomorrow at 6:40, we're going to have donuts and debates. We're going to have some donuts, and we're going to debate. I hope to see you at both of them.
Both events meet at the tower. Remember, God bless America.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Also, it's not, I was confusing it with ASU, which is Arizona State. It's no. ACU is a private Christian research university in Texas.
Sorry.
And the inbred vibes make more sense.
This is, and again, I'm very sensitive and well aware that this could be punching down. There could be, you know, mental disability here. In fact, I'm pretty sure that there is. Homie is just hanging out because he wants to be like friends with these guys. But we just have to watch this again. Like, it is so, this is what TPUSA is working with right now, y'all.
Oh, man.
Go.
Keep in the go. Definitely don't edit out the go.
Wow.
Oh, hell yeah.
That was amazing. Wow. Well, you can see, you want to see more of that?
Jesus saved shirt.
More of that.
make sure they're not really looking in the camera. Yeah. Make sure they're just sitting down.
Come to our meeting tonight
gripping
at 6. We're going to do some frisbee golf. It'll be fun, and I hope you come.
And this guy, his knee is just bouncing up and down, which, by the way, Matt Lieb does as well, but I'm sorry. He's just like, I'm excited to talk. Here we go. Big moment, my
tomorrow
guy.
Tomorrow at 6:40, we're going to have donuts and debates. We're going to have some donuts and we're going to debate. I hope to see you at both of them.
Both events meet at the tower. Remember, God bless America.
Dude, this is a lot of, you know, misanthropic little virgins and one guy who hasn't figured out his sexuality and who's
and you get to decide who's who.
You can
I hope that they realize that this is not the fruit that comes from the TPUSA tree is not going to be nutritious. It's not going to get them where they want to go in life with women. with anybody of the that you want to connect with. Could be a man.
We're gonna
or
have
a woman.
Donuts and debates. We're gonna be. What is a woman?
There's all this propaganda.
None here, that's for sure.
Right. I wouldn't know.
No, but really, I'm asking, what yes. is a woman? And where? Where?
For some reason, the frisbee golf wasn't attracting just hordes of women.
Oh, God. You know, it's like they've lost their way. It's like Erica Kirk, you know, maybe there shouldn't be female CFOs or CEOs or, you know?
I think we should honestly be unburdened from all responsibilities, including voting. Let's just, this is how we bring those guys and de-radicalize them. Just say what they want to hear and then we'll tell them the truth.
This is the Majority Report in 10 years when things have gone drastically wrong and Emma's predictions on elections are just simply like, I mean, I can't actually vote, so
yeah,
I can predict.
I can offer my opinion unless this election doesn't go that well, and that will be outlawed as well.
Yeah. Green light from Sam means I can speak. Red light means I cannot speak. It's Churrascaria rules in the, you know, under his eye.
Yes.
Let's okay, beyond that, oh God, it's just so funny. I want to talk about China, and I want to talk about maybe some Kash Patel, but also Chuck Schumer's response to this China trip with you.
Mm-hmm. Oh God.
This Nicholas Kristof opinion piece that apparently the New York Times is being sued over about rape in Israeli jails of Palestinian detainees. And then finally,
the Israeli government is suing the pro-Palestine New York Times for such obvious misinformation about the rapes that have been extensively documented and some of them even caught on camera. Yeah.
I mean, we could start talking about it. It's, you know, look, we're in a time when like Nicholas Kristof and Nicholas Kristof is kind of a lib darling.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he broke, I believe, the Malala Yousafzai story and really like focused on Afghan women. I remember being in an event of his and like me being my little radical self, like wrote down like a little a little question. It was like, you know, pass around a question and ask and blah, blah, blah. And because he was talking about the liberation of Afghan women. And I like wrote like, how are Afghan girls and women supposed to be liberated under like U.S. bombs and occupation? Because it felt like a very divorced conversation sometimes. Yep. He would have, right? Like there was a liberal playing into the war on terror under the like, we must free the women guys. And I think it's fair to say that Kristof is also one of those people who's actually been politicized by reality, you know?
Well, and I think about someone like Chris Van Hollen as a senator as maybe a decent example of somebody who is a liberal, like in earnest, and believes perhaps maybe not in a version of socialism like we do, but believes in liberal values in the real egalitarian, humanitarian sense, and isn't like 95% of other politicians who will, when they say liberalism, what they really care about is market liberalism.
Totally. And then humanitarianism, just in order to like spy on another country or, right, you know, undermine its elected government or whatnot. But this, I mean, so it's a pretty harrowing piece. And I want to like highlight some of this. And I do think it's pretty momentous. It is an op-ed, of course, like many of Kristof's pieces. But he talks about how while it's not necessarily policy, rape is systematic in Israeli prisons. He writes, the United Nations report put it last year, one of Israel's standard operating procedures and a major element in the ill treatment of Palestinians is sexual violence. A report out last month from the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based advocacy group often critical of Israel, concludes that Israel, quote, employs systematic sexual violence that is widely practiced as a part of organized state policy. And there's just some really harrowing stories. And you know, one thing, Emma, that I thought was really the most sort of interesting facet of this to me is that Palestinians often don't talk about the rape, because it, you know, obviously it's shame. It's, they're ashamed. It's stigmatized.
Yes.
And especially in with, you know, a culture and a people that pride themselves on their endurance and resilience and resistance, to say that you were abused in this way, it, like, you know, the martyrdom and the sort of heroism, that's what Christoph talked about, that makes people just not share exactly what happened.
And also, I mean, most of these prisoners, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not sure exactly like the proportion in terms of who Christoph profiled, but most of them are men or boys. And that is an additional layer of shame that crosses a variety of different cultures.
Exactly. Absolutely. So this is, yes, Samuel Sai, 46, a freelance journalist, was taken to a prison cell after his detention in 2024. Guards threw him to the ground. They were all hitting me. One stepped on my head and neck. Someone pulled my pants down. They pulled down my boxers, and one of the guards put a rubber baton used to beat prisoners. They were trying to force it into my rectum. I was bracing myself to prevent it, but I couldn't. It was so painful. The guards were laughing at him. Then they used carrots. Another person was blindfolded. One of the guards was a woman who he said grabbed him by the penis and testicles and joked, "These are mine," and then squeezed them until he screamed from pain. Israel has 20,000 people detained in the West Bank since October 7th, 2023, and more than 9,000 Palestinians were still being held as of this month. Many have not been charged, but were detained under ill-defined security grounds. And remember, these are all military detention facilities, right? And they are tried, if and when they're ever tried, it's by a military court.
Which has a 99% conviction rate for Palestinians. And that is also the same system that Ben-Gvir was, wearing that noose on his lapel, and successfully his party and the other members of the coalition were able to pass the death penalty law that says basically if you're convicted as a Palestinian in military court, that you can be executed. And as I just mentioned, 99% conviction rate.
Yeah. And then they put it on a cake. And then his wife put it on a cake for their 50th anniversary.
That's so romantic. You know, it's hard for us to sit here in judgment about, you know, because like cultural norms are different. And in Israeli culture, hanging Palestinians by the neck is just a part of the quotidian everyday life. And that sometimes can become a kink for a couple.
Jesus. I mean, it certainly is for them. Israeli forces systematically employ rape and sexual torture. This is according to that Euromed report. It cited a 42-year-old woman who said she'd been shackled naked to a metal table as Israeli soldiers forcibly had sex with her over 2 days while other soldiers filmed the attacks. Afterwards, she said she was shown photos of her being raped and told they would be punished if she didn't cooperate with Israeli intelligence. So this is the other thing they're doing. They're extracting informants from this torture and sexual violence. So, you know, they're offering detainees the ability to like go free or whatever, so long as they rat out and inform their family, their community.
And we've known from the war on terror that a lot of times, and most of the time, that information that is gathered under duress is not helpful for whatever even the aims of the torturers are. It is about ending the rape. It's about ending the torture, giving the torturers the answer that they need most, the prisoner, the victim feels that they need in order for the pain to stop. There have been empirical studies about it with waterboarding, and I'm sure as hell the results are quite similar with rape. The fact that we're even having this conversation is insane. And it also isn't, I mean, me going down this road isn't even really worth our time, because we know that, like, say, yeah, they may gather some information to bring to their supervisor, but that's not the overall goal. That's a knock-on effect of the torture and the rape. It's about exerting power and dominance over somebody. That's what rape is. It's an act of violence and not, you know, it's often
and control
and control. Right.
I mean, and shame. I mean, that's part of it. Right. And again, this is these are the Israeli military calling, you know, Palestinian Amalek. Right. And that this is their God given right. And all this. I mean, this is about dehumanization. Everything they claim about Palestinians, they teach their kids to hate. Da, da, da. It is a massive projection. We've learned this. We know this. I mean, this is Save the Children. And it's funny because people wonder, like, why someone like Miss Rachel has gotten involved with Gaza. And now she's set her sights
on. Member of Hamas. Yeah.
Yeah. Noted member of Hamas. My favorite anti-Semite, Miss Rachel. And you're like, oh, you actually know her story. And she was like, I worked with Save the Children. I wanted to actually work with humanitarian organizations. And it turned out Gaza, and this was pre-October 7th, was a massive gaping wound as one of the, you know, the youngest populations in the world. And Palestinians, I don't know the full stats, but like there are, I think they are quite a young population. And especially the people who are detained, as Emma's saying, especially young boys. Save the Children commissioned the survey last year of children ages 12 to 17 who had been in Israeli detention. More than half reported witnessing or experiencing sexual violence. Save the Children said that the true figure was probably higher because stigma left some unwilling to acknowledge what happened to them. Israel welcomed the UN report documenting the sexual assaults, but then rejected the report's calls to investigate Israeli assaults against Palestinians. So it's like, I guess you can document them, but don't investigate them. And I think we saw that in the, and I'm going to pronounce it wrong. Matt just said it to me the other day, but the Seydiman Detention Center, where we did actually get footage of one of these rapes happening where, you know, soldiers use their shields to sort of block cameras, but it was very clear what they were doing. And there was,
they were wrong on the angle. Like the camera was almost, they used the shields like this and the camera was kind of positioned here. So you could still see most of the rape occurring. And it was a gang rape as well. So, I mean, but like, this is the exact same as what I talked to Dr. Tarek Lubani of the GLIA Project about. He sees when he's treating patients in Gaza, one day kids will come in and they all have gunshot wounds to the head. The next day they'll come in and the kids have gunshot wounds to the genitals. They take turns. They're sadistic kind of games that the Israeli military is playing. And that is no different than rape, including the usage of dogs.
Yes.
Raping these Palestinian prisoners, which Christoph did recount. And I want to commend Christoph because within the context of the New York Times and the mainstream, like legacy press, this is reporting that is.
Your internet went out.
Oh.
No.
Am I here? No.
While Emma comes back, or maybe this is on my side, Christoph did say. Other Palestinian prisoners and human rights monitors have cited reports of police dogs being coached to rape prisoners. Jesus Christ. I know you're not supposed to be like, think of the dog in this situation, but I'm also a little bit like, what the, like, that's awful. Like, that is animal abuse yeah. of humans.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. I lost my train of thought, but it was something similar to what you were
commending Christoph for talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so within the confines of the legacy press and stuff like that, I mean, this is a rarity in that kind of reporting, but this information has been widely available for quite some time, and I know you and I have both spoken about it. And the reason that it doesn't get the coverage here in the United States is truly pure racism and corruption. Of course, our relationship with Israel extends into kind of the Zionist press, which is also a part of the mainstream press, the same press that laundered the Iraq war. They work in tandem and they're sourced by the military industrial complex, people at high levels of government that are pursuing U.S. foreign policy objectives. So that's always going to be their slant. But it is still unconscionable that we're over 2.5 years into this genocide, and we're only getting a opinion piece on this widely reported systemic practice of rape of Palestinians.
Yeah, and the title is "The Silence That Meets the Rape of Palestinians," right?
Yeah,
and it's a long piece. You know, people should really read it. But you know, the other thing he doesn't, and I this is probably part of it. He doesn't. He says, like, just as Hamas did rape, like, there is no refutation of, again, The fact that there were no actual October 7th credible rape accounts. Again, that's not, I believe they're from what I've, you know, learned and read and the people, the journalists that I've had on to talk about it, that while being held hostage or detained themselves, there was an account of the rape of an Israeli hostage. But that the shit that the Voices Without Words or Screams Without Words that the New York Times put out, their own podcast, The Daily, refused to actually corroborate because their team, they have a massive team of researchers, couldn't. So
it was all secondhand, it was all secondhand accounts. And the reporter that was involved in it was someone who didn't have any previous reporting experience, was an Israeli documentary filmmaker. And then there was another person who had a byline, but that wasn't in the opinion section. That was front page news by the New York Times that they have still not retracted. And it is no different than Southern papers publishing scandalous reports about basically black people, or particularly black men, and their crimes against white women, their sexual crimes against them, that would justify lynchings and further subjugation of black people's rights in the South. It's the same playbook, in the same way that the Nazis copied much of U.S. segregationist policies, and how Hitler was a real big fan of Henry Ford's anti-Semitic newspaper, for example. We have a continuation of the Israelis, the fascists, and the Nazis of the 21st century borrowing similar tactics.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing how much that article did to, you know, justify game on, anything goes, when it came to the retaliation for October 7th. I have to let my cat out.
Oh,
she's very sweet. Everyone wish her well. She's having some back issues. It's hurting her. She's got sensitive back. She's pooping all over the house, you know, as they do.
And I will say, as Francesca lets her cat out, I have met her, and for some reason I'm blanking on your cat's name, and I feel really badly about it. Cat name? What's the cat name again?
Ramona.
Ramona. I knew that it was a housewife. And she
and the best one, right?
Ramona is a huge MAGA racist, but I don't watch
just like
Housewives
my cat.
For their character. Ramona is, despite this,
she's fly.
She's not, I wouldn't say she's fly. She is so entertaining that it's difficult for me to even describe. But you have a very nice and friendly cat. Like, you should
she's
be proud.
Adorable.
She's very cute.
It's so funny. Me trying to, there should be like a reality show of just Francesca tries to enjoy reality shows, and it's just my face going like, nope. I cannot for the fucking life of me. There are things I can do, there's things I can watch, and there's things I cannot. Every time I'm like, maybe I'll just throw this on and see what the fuss is about and see if it like relaxes me and entertains me, and I'm like, no, I cannot be reminded that people this dumb exist. It hurts my heart.
I understand. Well, unlike
but if it's anti-feminist, I will watch.
Well, it's sort of anti, most people take it in an anti-feminist way, and like misogynistic gay guys like to see women fight, but I develop like personal like affection for all of them, regardless of their horrible qualities. Every TV show is an exercise in empathy for me, it for better, for worse.
I love that. Except for the Stakes Aside says medically stupid people, which is the most accurate and most hysterical slander of Nick Shirley. Dark woke forever. Let's go, Knicks.
Let's go, Knicks.
I just have to say, Kid is so femme phone panazzy says, Emma's married to Matt Lieb. Yes.
Yep.
Emma is married to Matt Lieb.
That's my husband.
I could use your help with him, by the way, if it is.
Okay, yeah. I'll take him this weekend.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's move it along. I'm glad we got the like serious and upsetting part out of the way, because we have to talk about China, which it's annoying because I can't say China anymore, because the MAGA crew is posting photos of themselves with China written the way Trump says it, as like yay, this is ours. It's like, no, it's not yours.
Joke's over then.
Joke is so over. The joke about, you know, you know, J.D. Vance being the little bloated face boy, that's over because he dressed as him. Sorry. But okay, so Trump went to China. Can I just ask, I thought this was going to be about ending the war in Iran. The last we heard, Trump was like, I'm going to go there. And this is all about Iran not having a nuclear weapon, which they don't, nor did they have, were developing, as per his own intelligence community and Joe Kent, who just resigned. But now all of a sudden we're having, I guess it was about a lot more. And now it's just like Xi and Trump kind of loving on each other a little bit. Flanked by a bunch of oligarchs. But what was your understanding of why they were doing this meeting?
Well, so this meeting was supposed to happen in either March or April and was postponed because of the war in Iran. It's the first summit of its kind in, I think, 9 or 10 years with the American president going over there with a lot of flowery pageantry. This was all set up by Trump's tariff war with China, which the United States has lost horribly. Just ask soybean farmers who we've now had to bail out trying to bail out. A lot of these farmers are going to go under and then get gobbled up and consolidated by big ag, which, yep. You know, I do think that we should not be Pollyannish about some of the motives of the people in the Trump administration who may say like, hey, yeah, this is going to be inflationary, but at the same time, we're able to get around raising, in theory, income taxes on the wealthy if we just do a compounding sales tax on everybody else. And if the farmers can't sink or can't swim and they sink, hey, some venture capital will buy it up. Some other big agricultural firm will buy it up, and we'll yep. be able to make those guys rich. Like everything Trump has been doing, including this China trip where he arrived flanked by over a dozen of like U.S. based billionaires, Elon Musk, Tim Cook. Jensen Huang of NVIDIA was a bit of a surprising groupie to join. But I mean, NVIDIA is the largest company in the world by market cap right now. And he's Taiwanese American. So that's why it was a little bit surprising for him to go to talk to China about this. And Trump is hoping, I think, it's like his pipe dream is for China to agree to some deal where they buy NVIDIA chips. But it seems more likely that it's just going to be some sort of small ball agricultural deal that hopefully helps out our farmers and ends some of the agony that Trump has put them through. And Boeing also apparently wants this aerospace deal with China because that's going to be the biggest emerging market. And they're trying to compete with Airbus. And so those are, I think you can anticipate some Boeing deal. You can anticipate some agricultural deal. But this is going to be more about Trump saving face and looking like he got some big victory. He wanted to go into this meeting with Xi Jinping with a strong negotiating position. And he did kind of fit his illegal criminal war in Iran into that incentive structure. You know, haphazardly. It's not like he does anything with a lot of long-term planning in mind. But because, China is Iran's largest, biggest client for crude. In particular, 10 to 15% of China's crude comes from Iran. And then Asia, the Asian markets in particular, are especially dependent on Iran. So that's in China's sphere of influence. Trump felt like he could get this done and over with, and that he would go into this meeting with China, this summit, with a really strong negotiating position. We control your oil. We control all of this. What right. can you do? And that didn't
buy the
happen.
NVIDIA. Buy the NVIDIA.
Yeah, like buy the NVIDIA. Exactly. And that's, of course, that wasn't going to happen. He was sold a bill of goods by the Israeli Israeli intelligence apparatus and the hawks in the administration. And we are in a much worse position with a looming energy crisis that has already hit Asia and is going to hit the United States, and it continues to raise our gas prices. We're a billion barrels of oil short. There's no, like, that is a physical commodity, and the chickens are going to come home to roost at a certain point, and we're going to have to deal with that situation. So, like, there's only so much market manipulation that can be done. So my point is just like, you know, Trump, I think, wanted to use the Iran war as leverage against China, but it's, of course, gone in the exact opposite way. And, yeah. And I'm sorry, one more point. He should have known this because China is less dependent on oil than we are. Like, right. We do pump our own oil, and that does make us less susceptible to, say, the Strait of Hormuz closure compared to Europe and Asia. But I just read this report from Carbon Brief that came out earlier this year on the show today. China is now a net, it has less net carbon emissions. They are reducing their carbon emissions despite growing at an extremely fast rate. And they now have this like incredible capacity for their renewable energy, like solar power output, wind output, nuclear, those all increased.
I love informed comment. They have this great, they'll collect a, this is Juan Cole's outlet. China's surging clean tech exports are dethroning oil. This came out a couple weeks ago.
And they are exporting it too, but internally, like they also have a battery capacity that exceeds even the demand right now for their renewable energy. So they have the capacity to even grow more, and they're doing so at a rapid pace as the country's economy grows in a faster way than it ever has.
Yep.
So like the idea that we could have used Iranian oil as leverage for them, we're just accelerating their ascension.
Yep, absolutely. So solar is now global. They're talking about all that. I mean, it's truly embarrassing that like the Iran war has simply hastened the demise of the whatever American empire or the American economy, right? I mean, it's not just about empire, but like the American innovation, American, business, whatever the fuck, ingenuity, which at one point we had, I guess. This is hastening it. And we're just like, China, take the reins, baby. Okay. They're just biding their time, just sitting there, laughing the whole way through. And I thought it was interesting to hear Xi, because like, I think the other part of this, like Xi doesn't want this. China doesn't want this war. They don't want this smoke. They're tired of this shit as well. And they're like, hey, why can't we all just work together to have some, you know, make our money? And look, this, there's a lot of love, especially from Trump to Xi. We've known that Trump has said, you know, I wish I could be Xi Jinping because I want to be president for life. He's jealous of him. He's jealous like of every autocrat. But, you know, more than that, I'm just like, don't you just feel like this is like the fucking, we're like now, in 2 years, we're going to be in a hot war with China. Or no.
I think the one upshot is that Trump doesn't seem to be as hawkish as other people in his administration and as the DC blob is like concerned. The problem is that he's just going to give away like a lot of American resources for corrupt deals. Totally. It's just, I think under Trump, we are a lot less likely to present a hawkish position towards China. That's the one kind of silver lining here.
Put a pin in that because I've got evidence to support what you're just saying now. Also, the other thing good about not going to hot, like that prevents us from going to a hot war with China is that, Netanyahu doesn't give a shit because there's no the Muslims there have already been, you know, put in Uyghur camps. But anyway, okay. So she says we should be partners, not rivals. We should help each other succeed and find the right way for major countries to get along well with each other in the new era, the era where we're on top. The world has reached a new crossroads, whether China and the United States can move beyond the so-called, what is that? What did he just say?
I really don't know.
The Thucydides clap trap? The Thucydides trap. We gotta look this up, dude. She just pulled a fucking,
he's trapping,
he pulled some sort of, oh, the oh god, I'm reading an AI overview, kill me, I'm sorry. It's a term popularized by American political science Graham Allison to describe apparent tendency towards war when an emerging power threatens to displace an existing great power as the regional or international hegemon. In other words, you could go quietly or you could go loudly. You pick. So he's acknowledging, but in his Thucydides trap that we're the rising power. Y'all are on the descent, but Trump's too dumb.
Trump's like, I mean, I get it. Yes, the Clintley's trap.
Yes,
trap.
I meant someone say the clap. I had the Thucydides clap before Melania.
I grabbed Thucydides trap against her consent.
Grab her by the Thucydides. But this is kind of some stealth diss from Xi here. Don't nobody know. You think the translator's on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, here's what Trump
said. Had a fantastic relationship. We've gotten along. When there were difficulties, we worked it out. And I just want to say, on behalf of all of the great delegation that we have the greatest businessmen, the biggest, and they're all with me. They, every single one of them, and they're here today to pay respects to you and to China. And they look forward to trade and doing business, and it's going to be totally reciprocal on our behalf.
It's amazing, you know, like you have two autocracies. One cares about its people a little bit. And I heard you today on your show, you know, the central state planning versus what did you call it? Sort of a kleptocratic free for all.
Oligarchic. I mean, I'm sure I don't remember, but something along those lines, like just a bunch of billionaires that are looting the government for their ends, like while they can.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, people are like, what, why do young leftists, you know, like China so much? Number one, Hassan. Number two, you know, you
Victor Wembanyama. No.
Exactly. You see what China's able to do with their central state planning. You see that they are able to, you know, have these incredibly like way faster, you know, chips, better AI, you know, more whatever we're talking about, the batteries that actually don't conserve, use as much energy, the high speed rail. On and on and on and on. And here I'm in California, and I don't mean to get you into the governor's muck at all, but like we on the debate stage in California for governor, they're constantly being asked, should we be exploring and, you know, more oil drilling in this state? Because this state is getting hit the hardest. We literally have the last ship with oil from the Strait of Hormuz, like off the coast. And when that goes, we got $7 gas now. It's going to be like $8.59. I mean, it's like, I don't know how to explain to people who live in a point of privilege, like in New York City with subways, but like,
yeah,
LA doesn't function when there's $8 gas. Like, I'm sorry. It just, you cannot, it doesn't work.
Yeah. No, it's absolute. I mean, when Trump said he doesn't care about Americans' finances, that's exactly what he means.
100%. And then, but it's so soul crushing as someone who wants to survive on planet Earth to hear that the answer is, the question is always, should we drill more versus how can we shift to renewables? Should California be entering into agreements with China to accelerate our solar capacity? Things like this, how can we better use the resources that we already have, you know, in a state that's quite literally on fire because of fossil fuels, right? Because of how dry it is, because it's, you know, we have all these El Nino off season, whatever the fuck. But yeah, so that was that. And then let's just check in with Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer is very upset. He said, the American people may not be benefiting from Trump's war, but our adversaries certainly are. Trump is allowing China to present itself as a source of stability and reason on the world stage, and Russia is raking in record profits from its energy exports. We must end Trump's illegal war as soon as possible. Okay, but like for a weird reason, you're saying you need to end the war to stick it to China?
And Russia. The what Chuck Schumer has no idea about and will not understand and will not ever understand is that we are not the good guys, and no one buys that we're the good guys anymore, and no one gives a crap about our competition with China and Russia as we commit genocide in Gaza. No one is like cheering on this competition, especially when we can't afford anything. Like they are operating in a completely different world. They are in the 90s. He's frozen in amber in the 90s for the rest of his career. It is amazing. It's amazing. Like, you know, this is, how do you not constantly, because of the pain that people are feeling here, frame the Iran war and the pain that it's causing economically as a problem of resource allocation, that resources need to be reallocated back to you for your childcare, for your healthcare.
Yeah.
No one cares about competition with China and Russia if we don't have healthcare.
What? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No one cares that Trump's moving forward with his plan to sell AI chips to Chinese companies linked to the Chinese military. Gong, gong, gong. Giving China access to this premier U.S. technology is dangerous and threatens our lead in the AI race that will shape the global economy for decades.
Oh, the AI race. You know, honestly, everyone's worried about like how expensive their groceries are and how they can't drive anywhere due to the gas. But mostly, I think everybody is concerned about the AI race, but not in the way that Chuck Schumer thinks, by the way, because there was a poll that came out in Gallup that 7 in 10 Americans do not want a data center built in their hometown. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the opposition to that, half of those, of that 70%, half of Americans strongly oppose it, which is a yep. very, very salient polling data point. Meaning, like, this is not just unpopular in like a vague sense, like what trans women in sports, where like people don't really care that much. The strong opposition measures that people are really pissed about this stuff.
I mean, this is where I don't know, the anecdotal interviews with like some MAGA at like the gas pump were like, I don't know, this is important. I got to pay $8 for gas because China. And then there's, I remember that one interview with the woman who's like, no, this is not what I voted for, but I voted for it three times. Guess I'm the idiot. And it's like, yeah. Leave it to the woman to have be a little self-effacing and like, thank you. But yeah, let me hear what he has to say. This is, I don't know why this is shared by a Joe Rogan account, but I am curious about what Schumer has to say. I have to speed it up because it's way, he talks way too slowly.
I get it.
Only Nixon could go to China, but soon they'll say only Trump could sell out to China. Xi Jinping has Donald Trump salivating at the prospect of $1 trillion Chinese investments in America that would threaten America's supply chains, threaten economic independence, threaten national security.
Jesus Christ.
Strengthen China at the expense of American strength. Donald Trump wants a deal with China so badly, he could sell out on American manufacturing. He could sell out on chips. He could sell out on Taiwan, which produces many of these chips. He could sell out on AI, on any number of grave issues.
He's already doing that.
I know.
Long lick of the finger to turn
no,
the page.
No, he's just selling out to American AI companies that are poisoning you and your communities. Exactly. Everybody listening to that is like, I'd rather them sell out to China than to freaking Elon Musk and
Sam
Altman.
At least the chips would be better. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No one, there's no constituency
the 21st for this. Century. Right now, again, to get his photo in the newspapers and try what work to raise his very low poll numbers, he's going to sell out.
Sell out.
We can't let Trump willingly give China our superior American
it's
technology.
It's not superior.
Or allow him to serve Taiwan.
You've not seen Schumer more animated about ending this war than in this moment when he's going to China. It's like, there's got to be sort of, again, this like hawkish angle, anti-China angle for Schumer to get excited about wanting to end this war in Iran, which, by the way, for the record, he only had a problem with because it was not presented to Congress and didn't get congressional approval first. Not that he didn't think it was important to, you know, topple Khamenei or, you know, the Iranian government. And yes, it's terrible. But remember the line, like, never, let's not let the Democrats, who absolutely echoed Trump's every single word except for the invade Iran right now part, forget that they were greasing the wheels and have been greasing the wheels around this war for decades now.
I mean, like, Chuck Schumer is completely, I think, understands exactly that his career is nearing the end. And he's an ideologue in a variety of different ways. He's a hawk, but he's also, and he's paid off by Zionists, but he's also just an ideological Zionist. Go back and watch videos of him from the 90s and him talking about Israel, and you will see a very similar affect to that of Stephen Miller, for example. So This is somebody who vehemently is an anti-Muslim racist and has very few core principles other than that. And that is what he's going to pursue as his career comes to a close, even if it sinks the party, because as a senator and somebody who's so inculcated from the rest of us plebeians, he understands what's better for American interests. And that includes a quadrupling down on the Cold War and a support for a genocidal settler colonial state. And if you think differently, 90% of the Democratic base, you're just crap out of luck. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to swear, but I keep remembering the show is the Bituation Room.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's all screwed. Thank you guys so much for sending super chats. You know, people like Tony Barbosa keeping us alive, even if you get demonetized. I was in Brazil recently, and Tony, I meant to let all of my Brazilian folks know. I wish I had had a moment to have like a meet and greet in a cafe or something fun like that. But it was good. It was funny because I did this whole piece about how, like, you know, Brazil sentenced Bolsonaro, Jair Bolsonaro, to 27 yeah. years. He's been on house arrest for attempting a coup against the country when he lost the election to Lula. And it was like, oh, damn. So they actually hold their people accountable. Well, that just got revised and overturned. So the sentence was overturned and now it's only 2 years. Meanwhile, his son, Flavio is running for president against Lula, and it's very neck and neck. So it's a little disconcerting down there, if you will. Only the lungs of the entire hemisphere, no big deal. I mean, the last thing about the China stuff is, you know, Taiwan. It is concerning in terms of, like, China, I think, also wants like a little agreement, which, by the way, U.S. Congress is basically on the verge of signing like a massive weapons package to Taiwan.
Yeah.
Patriot missiles, all kinds of stuff. All of our activities in the South China Sea too. And with South Korea also are kind of a little bit, They're North Korea related, but they are also China related too. So this is a love-hate relationship that I think can, you know, bubble over. But I guess the point is like the Taiwan thing is interesting because I feel like Trump's new world order is effectively everyone gets their little fiefdoms and mm-hmm. you can invade whatever sovereign people or nation that you would like. And we're not going to do anything because we're going to, but we get to invade people who aren't near us, like Greenland and Iran and Cuba. So you guys can have Taiwan and you can have Ukraine and on and on.
Yeah. It's the whole like repeating of the Western Hemisphere thing. It's like Russia, you could do what you want. Although he doesn't have the fortitude to see it through. Like, you know, the Democrats just bypassed Mike Johnson, I believe, in the House for another Ukraine package. And the margins are so slim that they can do that. And I would imagine that the Senate's going to approve it. And I would be shocked if Trump vetoes it, because even like despite the fact that, yeah, I think ideologically his bend is like Russia could do what it wants. China can do what it wants. India, you want to be horrible to your Muslim minority, do whatever the hell you want. Like I do think that that is his proclivity. I don't think he has the fortitude or like stamina to veto a Ukraine weapons package. And especially if it's going to be making defense contractors and weapons manufacturers rich, it's just like not something I think he's going to do.
No, yeah, of course not.
Yeah.
Again, just low level, you know, proxy wars with China forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And let's just work together. Why can't we just work together? You know, one of the other interesting things lastly on this Brazil trip was like meeting with people around the world, you know, folks from Kenya, which, by the way, Kenya is getting completely screwed by UAE. It's very interesting because their like horrible government is basically like does all these deals with UAE to like sell them all their crops. Then they resell them to the people. It's just awful. But also like China's role in a lot of these countries is much more, of course, a soft power, economic development, you know, versus the fist, the boot, the barrel of the gun. Meanwhile, a lot of these countries, you know, folks from like Zimbabwe, for example, were like, yeah, USAID money being cut means like our health system is being completely like destroyed right now.
Yeah. It's like we, there's many critiques of USAID that I think are relevant, but like I'm also just realistic about how a global empire is going to operate, and it makes sense to have kind of soft power arms via NGOs for like a capitalist superpower to do that, right? And of course parts of our government are going to be working with the CIA, even if it's, I would say it's too far to call them CIA cutouts in every instance. Like, no, USAID no. did really good work and did hundreds of thousands of people are probably already dead based on these cuts. So,
yep.
Like, it's a mixed bag. But if I were to pick how my global superpower that I'm a citizen of was going to be behaving, I would prefer the soft power covert stuff way more than what we're doing bombing the hell out of girls' schools.
Yep. Hey, before we go, I know you got to go in a little bit. I did want to talk to you about our friend, our former friend, Anna Kasparian.
I was like, our friend?
Sometimes I check in on like what Anna's up to, and then I like actually feel sick to my stomach sometimes listening to her because I find her so distasteful and upsetting and annoying and incorrect. But this interview, which I actually kind of, if you can stomach like more than 5 minutes of watching Anna talk, watch it, because Miriam Francoise is very smart. And she used to work with Al Jazeera Media. Folks might remember her from her work. Sort of, I think she started her own show called The Tea. So I wanted to play some of this because a little story before I play it. You know, like a few years ago when Anna and I were still talking, she and Cenk actually had the cojones to debate people on the left, which they stopped having. They claim they want to work with all people. They're currently just every single show of TYT right now is just an like just tons of baby oil and Tucker's asshole. And it's just over and really? Over. And the layers of baby oil on his asshole are just insane. And they constantly defend. In fact, Anna here defends to Miriam why she wants to, you know, glaze Tucker's asshole. And that is because you should never not work with someone simply because you disagree with them on one or two issues. Weird, because I feel like the so-called max left, i.e. people who believe in trans rights or moving money out of the police and into social programs, have been discarded wholeheartedly for being irrational and unable to be reasoned with by her, Anna and Cenk. But yet we agree on many other things, corporate power, overturning Citizens United, abortion rights. But funny how some people get, you know, you can work with them, but others can't even work with them, can't even debate with them. The point is, the digression goes back to, she had Olayemi Olorun on with Cenk, and they had a very interesting discussion about defund the police, and Olayemi as an abolitionist sort of presented her case. And this was, you know, back in 2021. Of course, the Black Lives Matter movement had been popping off and was sort of at its tail end. And at various points, Cenk and Anna were a little bit resistant to, honestly, they covered it, but I think very reluctantly and sort of resentfully. And Anna thinks that Ole is, in her words, racist. And she told me that. She goes, I just feel like Olayemi's like, she's racist. She's like racist against white people. And like Karen is actually a slur. And she told me this. Like Karen's like a bad thing to say.
Didn't she say that she has a hard time talking to black people?
I don't remember that clip, but
okay.
I've heard the lore of said clip. And I had to explain to her, I said, so the thing about racism is it is structural. And so because white people were never enslaved by African Americans, that you cannot really say like racism. You could say a bigot or someone who is,
prejudiced and minded, but racism is directly related to sociological and political power imbalances that come from the fact that this country was built on white supremacy and we lived under decades of slavery and Jim Crow and centuries of Black people being by law designated as second-class citizens, including practices that exist to this day that are like that you could list off: redlining, you know, differences in Black wealth that go down for generations that can
only
be
explained. Why are you trying to divide us, Emma? Why are you trying to? This is my thing with the left. Yeah. Always trying to divide us by talking about reality, and I really, you know, I don't like that. Because that makes it harder for me to layer the 17th layer of oil on Tucker Carlson's hairy ass.
So you've got to stop with this analogy. I'm going to throw up on
screen. Okay.
In the lead up to the 2024 election, guys, this immigration issue is really hurting the Democrats. They got to take it seriously. I got attacked. Okay. All right. Well, when you see the shift to the Republican Party, hopefully you'll wake up to the fact that we've made mistakes and maybe we can change. Maybe we can do better moving forward.
Who is we? Kamala Harris moved so far to the center on immigration. She told immigrants to their fucking faces at a town hall that they have to come the right way, effectively.
Okay, she was like, she said she's unaligned, though. I thought that was her whole new brand. I haven't subscribed to the Substack, so I don't know what the new updates have been.
Yeah,
it's a little jarring to see the kind of shift back into the "we come on guys" thing when I don't think that she identifies with the left at all.
No,
anymore.
She doesn't. But okay. But again, that's how you build the brand by saying you used to be on the left.
We'll see.
But don't you see some of that identitarianism on the right as well? Because I feel like there's
we have to go back. I'm so sorry.
Here, as an Asian worker, are not the same as a Black worker.
Okay. So here Miriam is trying to talk about how race is important in class analysis. So here Miriam is basically trying to break that down.
The left, we're saying some pretty horrific things about because terrible, you know, bigoted or biased comments that were said about other groups of people. Like, you're not going to change the culture unless you're willing to reject all of that, right? And you don't want to see it directed at anyone. I even saw it directed at Asians during the affirmative action fights, because there were a group of Asians who challenged affirmative action all the way to the Supreme Court.
And oh my God. Oh my God. I'm sorry.
The only group in the United States that people on the left were saying some pretty horrific things about because of the fact that they're Asian. Oh, Asians think so highly of themselves. They think they're white and this.
Okay, you're just going to have to deal with some of the BS she says uncontested so I can get to the better BS.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump in right there, but I just she's lying about the Asian American thing. Keep going.
Well, her claim is that, yes, people on the left were racist to Asians because they joined affirmative action, anti-affirmative action lawsuits.
It's not conversation.
No, but the only reason that they were included in that lawsuit that was by a conservative group, I'm trying to look it up right now, is because they were using that as a shield to basically say that, oh, it's white people being discriminated against, but also Asian people too, so that they could get rid of affirmative action processes for Black people, Latino people, etc. The reason that those practices exist is not because we pick some random groups out of a hat and decide that these are the ones that we want to uplift and these are the ones that we hate. It's because those groups have been systemically discriminated against by higher learning institutions and have like actual tangible differences in the way that like teachers respond to them, in socioeconomic status and all of that. That's what affirmative action is about.
Well, she doesn't think so.
Okay.
Not.
I suppose, of course, and I hear you on that, but I suppose some other people might say, but within that working class, yes, the working class is screwed, but actually Black people are the most screwed of that group, right? That within that, it's not equally screwed. And similarly with affirmative action, you know, your prospects as an Asian worker are not the same as a Black worker. And that's, you know, statistically backed up, that when you see the numbers on unemployment, when you see the numbers on people applying for jobs and actually being successful, that reflects also race in addition to class. I mean, do you feel that, you know, because a lot of people, I suppose, on the right today are sort of within this idea of, you know, white lives matter, that we shouldn't talk about race, that actually race is, like you say, an impediment to kind of coalescing around more important issues as they might see it. Like there's a sort of, I think, desire to go back to a colorblind world, which, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not sure is going to serve the working class equally.
Well, let me ask you something. We did have affirmative action for many decades. Did it solve anything?
I mean, okay. This
fucking smile is absolutely killing me.
Affirmative action for many decades. Did it solve anything?
Like, Miriam just gets done explaining very, very, very respectfully why identitarianism or identity politics gets played by the right as well, and also how class and race intermingle, and that working class, number one, majority of working class people are people of color and are also women, and that should factor in. And then Anna just comes back to the like, well, we had affirmative action. Did that solve anything? Sly little smile as if she knows it didn't.
If our efforts to address systemic racism are not a panacea that have an 100% hit rate, then apparently the justification is to do away with the program altogether. It's so obvious that she's only listening to conservative media, because this is a conservative construction, and you don't need to just apply it to racism here. You can apply it to any social program that the government funds. They break things. They cut them to the bone. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Then they don't work. The VA, healthcare on that front, SNAP benefits. They make it as bureaucratic and difficult as possible. And that's the same thing with affirmative action, as they've largely kept it to institutions and private institutions that are absorbing this. And the Supreme Court has now said it's illegal, so she got her way. That we should be addressing systemic racism in a much broader way that would actually have impacts, including forms of, yes, reparations that can close the gap between black and white people. Those would be actually things that wouldn't just tweak along the edges and not have the preferred outcome that she says that she's interested in. That would actually change things systemically, addressing systemic racism from the root. And she is using the conservative framework of, well, if it didn't solve everything, then what's the use of having any anti-racist measures on the federal level to begin with? And I just want to make sure that I was correct about this. Yes, Students for Fair Admission, that brought that affirmative action case to the Supreme Court, and it already started in 2014 when they brought that case, was funded by large conservative groups with Federalist Society ties. This is the Republican
so
party.
That white centrists like Anna can say, wow, well, Asians support this and they're people of color too. So let's watch a little bit more.
Is affirmative action the solution to racism, right, in society? I think that's what the question is here. I don't know that it is the same thing as saying that considerations of the ways in which race intersects with class should be removed from our considerations.
Well, I never said that. I never said that, right? But what I do have a problem with is the way that suddenly the left used identitarianism and the differences in race, the differences in gender,
define
the differences in all of these things that are immutable and we can't change.
Define that.
Define.
And
she
honestly,
has no idea.
The way that it was talked
about. Well, who got upset about trans people? I'm sorry. Who had a problem with trans people? Who wants to make a real big fucking fuss about who gets to be in the locker room of which locker room, which apparently in her locker rooms, everybody's staring at your genitals.
Yeah, she's an adult woman that can't see a dick without losing her mind, apparently. Everybody else's problem. And apparently it's also everybody else's problem that she has such thin skin that she can't deal with some, leftist Twitter accounts having a disagreement with her. To be honest with you, these people who can't have like a consistent ideology or choose to learn and grow from, say, a backlash on the internet should not be in this line of work. I'm not saying that it's easy. It's difficult to get criticism and feedback constantly. But if you have this paper thin of an understanding of yourself and the world, perhaps you are a little bit too susceptible to criticism and flattery, which is obvious with the Tucker Carlson thing, to be able to provide your audience with anything resembling the truth.
I mean, but this is specifically about race, and she's just so wrong. Like, I just want to underscore that. Like, you know, if you're going to go around here talking a big game about Israel's war crimes, you know, and yet you have such a fundamentally basic and right-wing understanding of racism and race and ethno-nationalism in this country, like, I don't know what to tell you, dude. I mean, again, we can get into her Israel stuff, but let's keep going.
Pit everyone against each other. So you don't have a coalition even on the left. You have people who are obsessed with their own personal identity more than anything else. So yes, racism does exist. That does need to be at the intersection of the class battle. Anyone who denies that is just living in a fantasy world.
Cool.
However, when you, and this has been a really big problem, when you uplift or you prioritize how different and fractured we are from one another, when your politics becomes about not class war, but your own personal grievances, all you're going to do is cause fights, and that's what you see on the left constantly. Everyone's fighting each other. Broken coalitions, fracturing.
Broken coalitions. Bitch, when have you ever tried to organize a coalition on the left in your goddamn life? And you honestly, let's take Cenk out of this, because to Cenk's credit, he's actually tried to organize things. You know, they might have been very ill-conceived and whatnot, but he's actually tried. Anna, on the other hand, has openly said she doesn't care about activism, and she doesn't even know if, like, activism works. She doesn't care. She only wants to build coalition. It's called cloutolition. That's what she builds. Yeah. She wants coalitions for fucking clout, okay? Not about change, not about, you know, policy, not about people. This is just about clout for her. But there's a little bit more. And she gets crazier.
Okay. Can I just add to what you're saying really quickly? Like, I just need to say that, like, the coalition building stuff, I would love for her to, like, articulate what she means by that. Because is it just a different internet personalities? Because DSA here in New York City has been organizing the hell out of the place. And we now have these, like, phenomenal members of the city council, state senators, state representatives. You have Claire Valdez, who's been able to be elevated by Zoran Mamdani. In my district, Brad Lander is coming up. You have Zoran Mamdani, obviously, and all of these other really exciting products of both, you know, DSA and DSA adjacent, and the organizing that has come from that has built a left-wing power base that gives you the leverage to go into coalition with other people and then potentially build power.
So
it's all about media. It's all about who comes on my show. That's the coalition that she's interested in.
Let me also tag in on that, because speaking of to her issue about identitarianism and everything's about race, of course, she really means on the left. She means black and brown people. She means trans people. She means queer people. She means women, even though she won't openly say that. But that's who she means. You know, I just had Melina Abdullah, who is the founder of Black Lives Matter Los Angeles here, who's done incredible work getting awful DAs out of office, making sure that, you know, killer cops are prosecuted, and has now been on every single No Kings march, every single No Kings rally. I'm up there and she's up there. And Melina's up there working with libs, working with majority white libs who hate Trump, who are, you know, she's like, look, some of them have their cringy ass signs, but I, as an abolitionist, I, as someone who believes in black freedom, black liberation, I believe in reparations, you're like, all of these things, these are spaces that I have to work in, because I want to advance, you know, when you say abolish ICE, let's take it a few steps further and talk about abolishing the police. Now, that's her, right? We don't all have to be there. But speaking of coalition, this is someone who is in coalition all the time with liberals, with leftists, with lawmakers, whomever. Like, seriously, it is so disgusting to say that because people accurately are fighting against structural racism, that somehow they're making it about themselves or about their pet cause. And, you know, as Moondragon reminds us, like, fortunately, Anna has no personal grievances with homeless people.
Yeah, the coalition. So, like, let's take Fred Hampton for a second, and we won't be, you know, a Jimmy Dore acolyte and steal his name without his family's permission
God.
I forget what that guy's name was who tried to do that. But I mean, like, yes, there, Fred Hampton was also, like, reaching out to white people and trying to develop a coalition in organizing and other groups to build a working class coalition. Do you think that Fred Hampton was like shy about black liberation and was being like, you know, a real wallflower about it? Have you ever heard some of his speeches about this? I mean, this is like, if you were to study the history of the civil rights movement, if you were to have an understanding of how these things intersect, you would see that it is inextricable, that mm-hmm. racism needs to be at the center of any kind of working class politics. And the way that you bring and fold that in is by having an overarching working class political agenda that can reach out to groups that are outside of that. But that doesn't mean that you don't address it. It doesn't mean that we don't pretend that it doesn't exist. In fact, doing so is going to narrow our coalition. You have to have the fortitude and the understanding that an argument about wealth redistribution that is about a working class style politics is a powerful and potent enough message to make those other cultural issues less salient, even if there is disagreement. Someone like Graham Plattner has proven that. Even a guy like James Tallarico, who is not a populist by any means, all of his ads are about billionaires, 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 billionaires. And yeah. You know what? He's bringing in people that are maybe, you know, like in DSA or voting for him in the primary. And then you have more conservative Democrats in Texas that also voted for him in the primary. So that's exactly how you do it.
And you know what's funny is I don't think Anna would disagree with what you just said. It's just that she's too egomaniacal and pigheaded to be thoughtful about her words or interested in learning. And so she could be you. I mean, you know, she wishes. But instead, it's like, nah, let's just give the right Marjorie Greene, Tucker Carlson, a bunch of flowers, and then say that race is dividing everybody.
And basically where we're at today, which is nowhere. We have Trump, a complete buffoon, elected for the second time.
Who you soft-pedaled.
Not just our country, but the globe as we speak. And so I was warning the left in the lead up to the 2024 election. Guys, this immigration issue is really hurting the Democrats. They got to take it seriously. I got attacked. Okay. All right. Well, when you see the shift to the Republican Party, hopefully you'll wake up to the fact that we've made mistakes. And maybe we can change. Maybe we can do better moving forward. We'll see.
But don't you see some of that identitarianism on the right as well? Because I feel like there's a victimhood in the white identity narrative as well mm-hmm. that we see today. This like, oh, woe us. We have been neglected for so long. We're now the oppressed group. We're the real minority. We're going to be replaced. I mean, I personally see echoes of that in a lot of the right wing discourse. It's just like a different side of the coin, but it happens to be the one that holds power. So to me, it feels much more
dangerous.
Do
you understand power, little girl?
People who are disenfranchised calling for, you know, more power in society, whether they are doing that in terms that you agree with or not. But the other is literally cementing that power institutionally along the basis of race.
This is great.
The Trump administration just get rid of a whole bunch of black and brown senior military officials recently who were up for promotion. Wasn't this a thing?
They got rid of a bunch of military officials that probably raised some red flags about what Pete Hegseth wants to do in the Middle East. Definitely.
What?
There's no question.
Wait. Yeah. What? No, that's pay attention, because that's not what she said. So Anna's deliberately not listening to this anti-DEI purge, and so says, yeah, they got rid of generals who were raising red flags about Iran.
That's not true. I have the article here. Since Trump returned to office in January last year, Pete Hegseth, the rambunctious, I've never seen that before, defense secretary, this is The Guardian, who made it his mission to remake a military ethos he denounced as woke, has fired or forcibly retired 24 generals and senior commanders with no performance related reason given. About 60% have been black or female, an approach Jesus seemingly Christ. Driven by the administration's proclaimed onslaught against DEI hires.
So you don't think that race was a part of that?
Is a problem.
Yeah.
That is a problem. I honestly don't want to spend my entire life and career harping on race. Okay, that's where I'm at. I'm an American.
I'm bored.
In a diverse country, everyone needs to be treated with equality and respect.
I'm an American. We live in a diverse country. This is a woman who, a year ago, when ICE was terrorizing Los Angeles in full force, every single federal agency was out on the streets cracking skulls of protesters. She said, unironically, they're flying foreign flags in LA because immigrants, children of immigrants, proud Mexican Americans, Salvadoran Americans, whomever else, had their flags and were flying them. And Anna Kasparian straight up said they're flying foreign flags.
She better not show any pride for being Armenian. I mean, God, aren't you an American?
The foreign flags. But she doesn't want to spend her career talking about race.
But at the end of the day, what pits us against each other the most are the elite. Are those who steal money from every single one of our paychecks and funnel it to a foreign country so they can do atrocities, so they can expand their borders. Yes, I'm talking about Israel. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't give a shit about race at all, at all. I don't think about it. I don't look at people and see them as a race. I see them as my fellow American. And I know that's very offensive to some.
I see them as my fellow HOA participant. Like, I see them as I see them as people who garden for me. I see them as people who I cross the street when they're walking towards me. I see them as people like
I can't talk to because I feel uncomfortable.
I know some people want you to be obsessed with race. They want you to be thinking about race 24/7. I don't do that.
There is an agenda. Don't you feel like there's an agenda? The race first agenda that we're supposed to be thinking about race and talking about race all the time. Who's pushing that agenda?
Well, they I mean, the reality is like,
I think it's the whites. I think the whites are doing that.
Well, they were saying that about Kamala Harris. And I've got many, many problems with Kamala Harris, even though it was like kind of a fun meme to cheerlead her to take over for Biden because we just needed Biden to drop out. But like, she studiously avoided talking about her gender or her race the entire campaign.
Yep.
And the fact that her and Cenk have repeatedly said that she relied on identity politics betrays their own racist assumptions about Kamala Harris. And that's just straight up. Like, I have a lot of problems with how Kamala Harris ran her campaign. And I almost think that she could have spoken more.
She should have done it more. I was like, this is what you got going for you, girl.
Like, yeah, literally. She was avoiding it.
You don't have like, a lot more going for you.
They got exactly what they wanted in that campaign. And they lost. They got her to be tough on the border, transnational criminal organization. She didn't mention her race or gender once. And they will still push the narrative that she did, either because it's convenient for them, for their new friends and their new audience, or they have racist assumptions about her. And it's probably a little bit of both.
For the people on the right who are obsessed with their white race, you're part of the problem. You're just part of the problem. No one's looking to replace
you. You mean like your new friend? What about your new? No one's looking to replace you. Your fucking new friend was the pioneer of mainstreaming white white replacement theory. That is Tucker Carlson, my friends. Yeah. That's him.
Give a shit about race at all. At all. I don't think about it.
Anyway. So that's it. Anna is colorblind. She doesn't want to talk about it. But you know, to her credit, although as future press secretary of the Carlson administration, she should probably scrub this interview. She does call out people who talk about the white race, and she's like, "I'm sick of that," you know, because I want to be colorblind. I don't see color.
Well, I hope it's worth it. If you do the happy merchant meme, you're going to get some horny groypers in your mentions. And that's going to feel really, really professionally fulfilling. So keep it up, girl. Don't change a thing. And I hope that this path leads you to spiritual fulfillment.
Oh, we know it won't. But she did call Obama homeboy in this interview, which I cannot, like, I'm sorry, like,
To be fair, she's knowing her a little while. She said that that's a turn of phrase of hers, but like,
I don't mind the homeboy phrase, but I'm just like, ugh. Just try not to. Just try.
Right.
Just try. Emma Vigeland, thank you so much for dropping by / continuing your long slog of a Thursday. And I hope you have a wonderful afternoon. Everybody. Yes.
I'm going to take my mom for a massage as a Mother's Day gift. How cute is that?
too cute. And I know you were sick, so you couldn't like take her out on actual
I had
Mother's
to cancel
Day.
Mother's Day plans, so this is my little I'm going out with her now. So
by the way, you do know that now that you have friends who've got kids, like you have to say Happy Mother's Day to everybody.
I'm sorry, I forgot. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. That's what I was fishing for. Emma Biglin, make sure your audio is, I think it's uploading, but be well.
I will.
A good afternoon.
I will.
See you next time.
All right.
We're going to do this
so
every month, right?
Yes. We'll see you next month.
See you next month. See you next lifetime. Thank you guys so much for being here. Let's read some comments. Have I heard of Bad Hasbara? That Matt guy is cool. God damn it. Do not take that Hasbara's shit here. That Bad Hasbara's hit shit here. Autumn leaves. Emma and Francesca tag team dunking on Anna as box office content. I just had to. I was like, this is too good. It's too good. Ants Master Jack says, using Anna's logic about affirmative action, since seatbelts don't save 100% of the lives, they are therefore useless. This is such a birthing person dig. Oh, I love you. Thank you, The Chaos Theory. You can always send a super sticker. You can also become a member. Become a member on YouTube. You get access to bonus content, especially our new show called Hot Button, guys. I've got a new show. Do you guys know I have a new show? It's called Hot Button. I'm in a literal studio, a physical bituation room. And it's very fun. Kenneth Mejia is my first. He's the city controller of Los Angeles. He's the Brad Lander of LA. If you're in New York, and if you're not in New York, I don't know how to help you. Or LA, I don't know how to help you, and I'm sorry. So sign up there or patreon.com/bituationroom. Near the Far World, Obama Gino in Yemen, 330,000 to 1 million deaths over Trump and Biden. So yeah, talking about the genocide in Yemen, good thing both Biden and Trump have taken Saudi Arabia's role in that very, very seriously and our own role in that seriously. Here's what I'll say about the genocide in Yemen that I think is important to remember, that there was a moment of sort of bipartisanship in the Senate, but it happened with two senators who were outside of the party structure generally, Bernie Sanders as an independent and Rand Paul, right, as a libertarian. I mean, caucuses, I guess, is a Republican, but I think is also an independent. They worked together for a bill to stop weapons. Trump vetoed it, but they successfully got it over the line to stop sending and selling weapons to Saudi Arabia that was going to kill Yemenis. That's the kind of bipartisanship. That's the kind of reaching across the aisle that I do think can work. If you are in a position like a senator to make something like that happen, absolutely. But if you're in a position as a podcast host or as a regular host to go on and assume that you're building bridges simply by going on other people's shows and not challenging them, I've got bad news for you. You just gave them a W, right? And this has been sort of, you know, the breaking point and the reason that I vehemently disagree with Cenk and Anna's strategy, which I don't think, again, is a strategy for anyone other than their own clout and clicks. Thomas Lofick says, speaking of ridiculous reality shows, The Apprentice has recently aired on the BBC. Instead of a job, Lord Sugar gives the winner £250,000 to start a business in which Lord Sugar gets 50%. Yes, Lord Sugar, that's his name. What the fuck? Number one, Jan says, call the China group what they are, oligarchs. Exactly. I mean, the thing about China's got its oligarchs too, but they also have, again, the like basic services met. We've done the like the same oligarchy, the same control, but no services. Hey, thank you, Gregulate86 over on Twitch for resubscribing, and On Screen Celebration for those bits, and Unknown User for your bits as well. All the other people, thank you, Fun Portland. Thank you, Daniel, says she telling Trump, don't F with me on Taiwan. Yeah, effectively. And Trump's going to be like, I mean, effectively, like, I won't mess with you on Taiwan so long as you buy these NVIDIA chips. But I think to Emma's point, she thinks that no matter what, we're going to still sell weapons to Taiwan because we would never miss an opportunity to enrich, you know, our own weapons manufacturers. It's what we do best. Fun Portland, you're my favorites. Love you, Emma. Love you, Mrs. Lieb. I just turned on my TV and had to send you some love from Drunk Guy at your Portland show. Oh my God, Drunk Guy at my Portland show. I love you. Wait. Drunk Guy. Don't go nowhere. Hang on. I'm coming back to Portland. I know it's a ways away, but September 8th, 7th and 8th. That's Labor Day 7th. And yes, I'm working on Labor Day. 7th and 8th, Portland, Oregon. Where we're going to do live Bituation Room again. Drunk Guy from Portland basically like was shouting out in the middle of the show and it was hella funny and then became friends. We're friends now, right? Yeah, we're friends. Dizzle McFizzle, when are we going to declare a ban on AI? Mr. Iverson is running around stealing people's jobs and apparently, I don't know, I don't watch the news. Yeah. Disney is fully replacing its animation staff with AI. It's wild. Political X6151, Hi. Hi, Francesca. Great show and guest topics as ever. I sent you a Trump Melania UK story that might be up your street. Shocked at Anna. Yeah. We all are shocked at Anna all the time. May Money in the building. What's up, May Money? Yikes, Anna. Yikes. As a black woman in America, this is so uncomfortable to watch. We get it. Everyone hates us. She needs a chill. Sheesh. Yeah, it's like, no, you can exist, but please don't talk about how you get 70 cents. No. What is a black woman in the country? It's like, what is like 56 cents on the dollar? Compared to a white man. Don't talk about that, you know. But you can exist, be out there, you know, do your thing. But don't ever want more or actually, you know, activate for real equality or justice. A-Start23 says, Fran and Emma, my two most favorite Americans in the world. Please never stop defending the actual left values. I know, I was trying to think of what to call this show, like China Max Lefting. I was almost there. Not Rachel Atwood, wishing a happy 39th birthday to my bud, Jeromey, pronounced Jeremy, fuck, Jeremy, who's running for Congress in Massachusetts' first. Let's fucking go. Happy birthday, 39, let's go. Yes, Hank Rodriguez, a fantastic Thursday with Emma, too. Appreciate y'all. You know, you're also, if you're on Substack, I see you. Become a paid member. You get that access to all of our exclusive stuff. But my personal favorite is on Patreon. So many reasons to join. If you become a member for a year, you get a free sticker or a free mug or a free t-shirt, plus the shout outs, the AMAs, the ad-free listening. Remember, there will be no ads on that. Also, our cute Abolish Ice merch, very adorable. It is a Smirnoff Ice, but it says Abolish Ice. Comes in black, comes in white with red, a little rose on top for our little socialist homies. Until next Tuesday, stay tuned. We got a new interview dropping on Saturday. Very excited for it, for the show Hot Button. But I love y'all and I'll see you Tuesday. Until then, fight the power, fuck the patriarchy, free Palestine, and don't just bitch about it, be about it. Bye.